Thanks, Karen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Jeremy. Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? How was the long weekend? It was nice to have the 3 days off in a row, wasn't it? How was your St. Patrick's Day? Did you go to a parade or not? We got an email from Alfie. Now, Alfie contacted us last week. He was the Grand Marshal in the St. Patrick's Day parade in Eclair in County Sligo. You're saying, where is Eclair? I can tell you exactly. It's in the Ox Mountains in County Sligo, 6 miles from Tubbercurry, 6 miles from Clunacool, 6 miles from Bonnyconlan, and 4 miles from the beautiful Loch Tolt. And as a matter of interest, 14 miles from where President Joe Biden's ancestors are from, in Ballina. I love that. That was Alfie's description last week. Anyway, he got back onto us and he said, thanks so much for reading out my email last week regarding our St. Patrick's Day parade in Eclair, County Sligo. You really made our day with people and floats coming from all over. Great floats depicting all walks of life, both present and past, with fabulous music to go with it. I got calls from America and the UK and many parts of Ireland. That's thanks to you and your team giving us a mention. Your show spans the world, he says. Oh, great. So thanks again for giving our precious town of Eclair a great mention. I love the description. 6 miles from Tubbercurry, 6 miles from Clunacool, 6 miles from Bonnyconlan, and 4 miles from the beautiful Loch Tolt. Are you sick of talking about the rugby? Ah, no, no, no. We'll gloat for another while. Yes, Grand Slam on Saturday. Johnny Sexton goes into the annals, the rugby annals, as the man who has scored the most points of any country in the Six Nations. That happened on Saturday, and of course it was his last match in the Aviva in the Six Nations, so there was a great send-off for him, and it was very emotional, and I think the emotion got to the players before the match. Very nervous first half and beginning of second half. We only really settled down at the halfway through the second half, but when finally it was over and we were crowned Grand Slam winners, there was loads of lovely scenes, and nobody left the Aviva Stadium. I don't know if you were there. And there was singing, and there was children, and there was hugging, and there was all sorts of things. And then you think you know Johnny Sexton. You know, you think you know him, and all the descriptions leading up to the match of great captain, great player, very serious man, very earnest, hard worker, motivator, all of those things. And then you see him lip syncing to this. And the head was going. Big smile on his face. Colm O'Connor in Waterford noticed that as well. He says, writing to the Irish Times today, listen to Freed from Desire. That's the song there with the la-na-na and the la-la-la from it, being played on an endless loop. Had me wondering whether, like the spin master in Father Ted, the Aviva Stadium DJ only brought one record with him that day. Colm O'Connor in Waterford. Now, if you don't get the reference of the spin master, there was the scene in the local hall, Father Ted, and Ted goes up to Father Billy O'Dwyer, also known as the spin master. And Father Billy is talking him through the whole setup, you know, about being a DJ and the decks and the mixer and all that sort of thing.
Ground control to the spin master.
It's like NASA. How do you keep track of it all?
Oh, sure, it's quite simple, really. You see, here we have the two turntables, which I control from the mixing desk here. This switch means you can flip between records if you want to get a bit of an old jam going, you know.
Well, I tell you, I can't wait. What records have you got for us?
Records?
A bit of the Bee Gees, I suppose. Get them all jumping.
Oh, God.
Billy, what's up with you?
Forgot the records, Ted.
What? Have you not got any records?
Just a second. Hold on a second. I might have one. I think I have one out in the car.
That's the only record that he had. Ghost Town. Now, not to be pedantic, Colm O'Connor from Waterford, but the DJ in the Aviva Stadium on Saturday had more than one record because he went on to play a bit of this.
Thank you for the days, those endless days, those sacred days you gave me.
Which is lovely. Luke Kelly, thanking the team for the days. And then he gave us a bit of this.
I'm
Johnny Sexton definitely in the Rugby Hall of Fame. And well done to the under-20s as well, who won the Grand Slam against England yesterday. Roll on the World Cup! Yay! Yay, yay. Another email came in from Michael Hetherington. He said, just sending you a short email to thank you and the team for something I learned from an interview with a representative you had on from the Blood Transfusion Board some months ago. I can't talk because I got a filling this morning. Anyway, back in 2001, I developed raised blood pressure. So at the time, if you had high blood pressure, you were not allowed to donate blood again. Or at least that was my understanding. But during the course of your interview with Dr. Ellen McSweeney and Declan Galligan, they said there were many reasons why people had to stop giving blood down through the years. But over time, the criteria for giving blood has changed. And now, if you're healthy, you can give blood with high blood pressure. So here I am, 16th of March, 2023, at the age of 64 and a lapse of 22 years. I donated my 33rd pint of blood with no ill effects, thanks to the show. And that's Michael Hetherington. Well done, you. That's great. 51551 ray at rte.ie. Now, we started this a couple of weeks ago. We'll see how it goes. We've asked the team just to tell you what they watched over the weekend and recommend it to you. It seems better that you do it the other side of the weekend when it's fresh in your memory. And it's definitely things that you've watched. So we'll do a bit of that. Yeah, here we go. A bit of theme tune there. Thank you very much. Thank you. Niamh, who's producing today, watched Kin last night. Great to have it back on a Sunday, she says. Very slick, like watching a movie. Cast are super and love picking out all the Dublin locations, which drives my couch partner mad. Hey. Emily H watched The Whale with Oscar winner Brendan Fraser. And she says she can see why he won the Oscar. Emily P watched Full Swing on Netflix. It's a documentary following a group of pro golfers across a grueling season of competition. She binge-watched it over the weekend. As someone who had very little understanding of golf, she says, I now have a new sense of respect for it. A must-watch for the behind-the-scenes drama alone. Thank you, Emily and Emily. Grace caught up with Fair City, and she's firmly on Team Sharon and reckons she's better off without Con Rafferty. She wasted that green sequin dress on him on St. Patrick's Day. Move on, Sharon. He's a snake. Come by name. Come by nature. Says our Grace. I watched Daisy Jones and the Six, which is great. It's on Prime, I think. And it stars Riley Keough, who is Elvis's granddaughter, and Camilla Marone, who is an ex of Leonardo DiCaprio. That's great. Great music set back in the late 60s, early 70s. And they say inspired by Fleetwood Mac, although it's fictional. And I also watch Luther, The Fallen Son. So it's Idris Elba taking his detective to the big screen, as in it's a feature-length movie. Andy Serkis is the psychotic baddie, and he is brilliant in it. You might remember Andy Serkis, who played Gollum in Lord of the Rings. So there are recommendations from over the weekend. There might be something in there for you. And while we're on TV and watching TV, in the paper today, it tells us that Only Fools and Horses is the most quoted UK TV show. And we've, you know, all the ones there, you know, Rodney and Del Boy.
You stupid little plonker, Rodney.
Yeah, that was. Blackadder is quoted a lot as well.
I've got a plan so cunning you could put a tail on it and call it a weasel.
That's Rowan Atkinson there from the Blackadder. John Cleese in Fawlty Towers.
Listen, don't mention the war. I mentioned it once, but I think I got away with it all right.
And back to Only Fools and Horses.
Yay, lovely, jubbly.
Finally, Only Fools and Horses.
This time next year, we'll be millionaires.
Yay! This time next year, we'll be millionaires. Now, that's that. On the show today, Paris Hilton. Yes, we have a chat with Paris Hilton. She has a new book, The Memoir, and anything you thought you knew about Paris Hilton, well, you don't know the full story. It's actually quite a moving book. She's had a rough enough life. I know, I'm just saying she's privileged. She was born into a billionaire family, but she's had a very rough life, and she's very honest. Searingly honest, isn't that what they say about memoirs, in her book, The Memoir, and she's going to talk to us about all of those things that make her who she is, ADHD included. And then after 4 o'clock, Naomi Parry, who was a stylist to Amy Winehouse over the years, she's bringing some of Amy's dresses down to Newbridge silverware, and she's in to talk to us about that and her friendship with Amy, and she has a couple of dresses with her as well. And of course, Connor Pope, it being Monday, will be here as well. And the quiz, and I'll tell you about that in a moment. But first, a bit of Amy Winehouse. Amy Winehouse and her version of Valerie. She would have been 40 this year if she was still alive. And it's very sad when you think what she had in front of her. She only really released two albums, Frank and Back to Black. There was another one, but it was sort of, you know, they went around to all the studios and got all the demos and the various bits and pieces. It was called Lioness Hidden Treasures, but that was after she died. And Back to Black was such an amazing album. And you're so sad that such a talent was lost to us. And what potential Amy Winehouse had. Anyway, there you go, Valerie. Kevin in Westmore says, it sounds like you're practicing to celebrate Mayo winning the All-Ireland in a few months. Mentioned all the Mayo place. No, I'm not at all. Yeah, I cracked my tooth over the weekend. Now, it must have been weak because it was only on a square of chocolate. I was treating myself, I know. My initial reaction was that there was glass in the chocolate. And it's mad the way you think. I was thinking, oh yeah, compo, glass in the chocolate. get my solicitor, please. But then it turned out that it was a piece of my tooth. Anyway, I was lucky I was able to get in to the dentist this morning and get a filling. So it's all sorted there, but I'm still a bit numb. So bear with me. Paris Hilton is coming up in a moment, but first we're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our Whodunit quiz. Yep, two people, two quizzers, three whodunit questions on music, sport, TV, books, politics, film, comedians. Like all whodunits, there will be clues. Without a clue, you get two for a correct answer, and with a clue, it's easier, you get one. And there is a great prize. And you're probably saying to yourself, I can't afford a break, but if I get onto the radio there with your man, I might win one for free. Yeah, we're giving a two-night stay at the Fitzpatrick's Castle Hotel in Killiney in Dublin, with breakfast each morning and dinner on one evening as part of their midweek escape to the sea package. It's an 18th century four-star luxury castle hotel located near the historic village of Dalkey, only minutes from Killiney Beach, with panoramic views over Dublin Bay and beyond. It's family-owned. Third generation now, it offers guests tranquility, breathtaking scenery and old world elegance, which blends seamlessly with the hotel's modern luxury, making it the ideal location for business or pleasure. Fitzpatrickcastle.com. Now, here's your qualifying question on this Monday afternoon. Who won Dancing with the Stars last night? Carl Mullen or Larry Mullen?
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
5 on 551 ray@rte.ie. Paris Hilton was the quintessential it girl at the turn of the century. As the great-granddaughter of the founder of the Hilton Hotels, Conrad Hilton, she was born into American royalty and was catapulted to worldwide fame with the explosion of the internet and her incredibly successful reality show, The Simple Life. But behind the glamour and perceived perfection was a more complex story of a young woman navigating the world around her with yet undiagnosed ADHD and an horrific time spent in so-called emotional growth boarding schools at a very young age. In her new memoir, we meet a very honest and courageous Paris Hilton, and she joins us now on the line from London. Hello, Paris.
Hello.
Good to talk to you. One of the quotes in the book that stood out for me was from Elliot Mintz. He says, you're a woman who lived eight lives at once. So we might get to maybe five of those lives. We'll see how we go. but your first memory, this is like mad first memory, is being on the lap of Andy Warhol.
Mm-hmm. Yes, my mom and dad were friends with him and used to go out with him to Studio 54. And then they would sometimes like have after parties at the Waldorf, and I would sit on his lap and draw, and he loved me and just always told my mom, one day this girl's going to be a huge star.
And he was right. and going back to your great-grandfather, he was featured in the Elvis movie. He was the man who signed the contract with Colonel Tom Parker, was he, to get Elvis to do his Vegas residency?
Yes, my grandfather was such a pioneer and was the first to bring Las Vegas residencies and had Elvis at the Las Vegas Hilton for hundreds of shows.
Wow, that's mad, isn't it? You were told all these stories as a child, were you, Paris?
Yes, I just grew up hearing just all the amazing stories about my family and just My grandfather was always a business mentor to me, and I looked up to him so much.
Mm. Like an unreal world for most of us, but it was your normal. That's the thing. Can we talk about ADHD? So you're in your 20s when you got a diagnosis?
Yes. So I had no idea as a teenager.
And what do you understand ADHD to be, and how does it affect you in your life?
Well, when I was a teenager, people were not talking about it. So I really had no idea why, but I just really couldn't concentrate in school. And it just was very difficult for me with everything, just memorizing things, being able to be responsible. And now I realize that if you can harness it in the correct way, it's actually a superpower. And my whole career, I've really thought outside the box and have been an innovator and someone who takes risks. So I see it actually as a positive attribute now.
Yeah, it is a superpower, isn't it? Because it allows you, it gives you an energy, does it?
It really does. It gives you this energy that I think that other people who don't have it don't understand, really.
Yeah. I suppose people who watched the documentary will want to read the book, because this is a companion book for the documentary, and a lot of the same themes and stories are covered. And the big one, and this was the most revealing one, is about your time in what's described as residential treatment facilities.
They call them emotional growth boarding schools.
Aha, right. Mm-hmm. And one of the, they were sort of advertising, they showed a bit of a clip of one of the videos that was advertising one of those schools. And there's a quote from it. It's for teenage boys and girls who need a change of attitude and direction. So are these fee-paying reformatory schools? Would that be a good way of describing them?
It's both. People can be private paid, or they're from the juvenile justice system, from just different parts. But it's all children from everywhere.
Okay, but all labeled as, and I'm doing the inverted commas here, troubled.
Yes, a lot of the kids in there just only had ADHD, and people didn't understand it back then.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, that's
so I wasn't even a bad kid. Like, all I did was sneak out at night, got bad grades, was getting kicked out of school. Yeah. So I didn't deserve to go to somewhere like that.
Of course you didn't. We don't.
No one does.
We don't have anything similar here, Paris. So would you just describe what they are, what age you go in, how you're treated?
There are these schools, and there's thousands of them around the world now. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry with over 150,000 children being sent to a year. And they're supposed to be to grow you emotionally, but the staff that work at these places are extremely abusive and just try to break you down. And it was just a terrifying experience being verbally and emotionally and physically abused by these people.
So you outlined there were cavity searches, and you weren't just verbally abused by the staff. You were encouraged to verbally abuse each other in an evening session called The Rap.
Yes, it was. They really wanted just to put everyone against each other, and they wanted everyone not to trust each other. And it was, I don't understand the point of what they were doing for that reason, but it was so traumatizing to be in that room.
Yeah, and even from the start, you were taken forcefully from your bed in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm. That's the way that they handle things in these places. They have these people called transporters, and it's something that has given me nightmares ever since I was 16.
Yeah, and you talk about that in the book and in the documentary, and it sounds horrific. And this recurring mantra that you hear, we can do this the hard way or the easy way. What was that with reference to?
Well, the two men came into my room at like 4:30 in the morning, and they held up handcuffs and said, "Do you want to go the easy way or the hard way?" And I had no idea who they were. I thought they were kidnapping me. It was very scary, and they don't explain to you where you're going or what's happening. So it's completely
horrific.
Traumatizing. It's
yes.
Horrific.
Yeah. And I'm trying to understand where your parents fit in all this. Because they knew, but they didn't know. Is that fair to say?
They had no idea. My parents thought I was going to a normal boarding school. These places have such deceptive marketing, where they have brochures and websites with stock photos of happy, smiling kids with rainbows in the background and riding horses, and it looks like these beautiful properties. But people have no idea what's happening behind closed doors. So my parents did not know.
So there's a physical abuse, sexual abuse, verbal abuse. This is a new part of your life, and I can feel that, you know, we're meeting now a new Paris Hilton. You've met up with other survivors, Katie and Jessica and others, and you've been campaigning now. You've gone to Washington to campaign to try and shut these places down for good.
Yes, and I'm so proud of all the impact that we've made so far. I've helped change laws in 8 different states, and now I'm going to be going back to D.C. in April to introduce our new bill. And it's already a bipartisan issue, so we have both sides on this. So now I'm just hoping that everyone does the right thing and this bill goes through when we go back in April.
Brilliant. You were living a lie then for a long time, keeping this a secret, portraying this cartoon character of an image. One of the quotes from one of the people who met you, who was a survivor, saying, "I tuned into The Simple Life, and you were saying to the nation that you never cleaned in your life, but you'd done manual labour in those places. You've been down your hands and knees cleaning the floors." So what was, thinking back on keeping that secret and keeping it to yourself, what was that like?
I was so traumatized, and I didn't even want to think about what I went through. So I made a promise to myself that I was never going to talk about it. Or I just didn't want this to be a part of my story. It was just so, it hurt me so much to think about. I just tried to not even think about. And now that I'm an adult, I realize that I built the character as a trauma response and almost a mask just to go into this world and be thrown into Hollywood, which is a very difficult place as well.
Yeah, the trauma experts talk about disassociation. So that's, I suppose, what you did. Creating this character.
I had to.
Yeah, you had to.
Just to survive in there.
And you talk about money a lot, you know, and that's no surprise coming from the background you do. And you were saying, if I get to 100 million, I'll be happy. And then if I get to 1 billion, I'll be happy. Do you view money differently now?
Definitely. Back then, I just really viewed money and success as freedom. So that was another thing when I was in there. I promised myself I'm going to work so hard and become so successful that nobody could ever control me or tell me what to do ever again. But now I am just so happy with my life and my baby and my husband. And that's what means more to me than anything.
So little Phoenix.
Yes.
Yeah. What age is Phoenix now?
He's 2 months old.
Wow. So do you see the world differently now? Because as parents, we often see the world through our baby's eyes.
Oh, yeah. I'm just so protective of my little boy, and I can understand how parents are just so protective of their children, because you just, as soon as you have one, you completely understand your parents way more than you would before as a teenager.
Because they did what they did out of love for you.
Yes, they did. And I couldn't understand. I was out of control. I was sneaking out every single night. I was staying out so late. And I can't imagine having my daughter be out so late at night and be scared of her in New York City. So I could understand why they would want to just have me at a boarding school where they thought I would be safe.
There's detail in the new book, Paris, the memoir, that you don't reveal in the documentary. And some of the detail is about you escaping from the various schools you were at, and it reads in places like a movie, you know, where you run, you get to a dirt track, then you see lights and you get to a what do you call those, 24-hour 7-Eleven or whatever they call them, and there's a phone and you ring your mother and you think, this is great, I'm safe, and next thing a policeman taps you on the shoulder because they've done a trace on the phone.
Yeah. Like, I know, just reading the book, my life is like a movie. It's just crazy what I've been through.
Who would play you in the movie?
We're already getting so many different calls from production companies wanting to make films and TV shows about it. And they ask me, who would you want to play you? And it's hard to, I don't know. I'm trying to think who could play me. They're like, you should play yourself because you literally look the same as you did 20 years ago.
Well, that's a lovely compliment, isn't it? And,
yes.
And you do, you're familiar with cameras and all that, so you're comfortable enough in front of the cameras. Just on that, because your dad, as well as your first memory being on the lap of Andy Warhol, it must have been a camera in your face as well, because your dad was an obsessive recorder of things with a camera, wasn't he?
Yeah, which is so great just to like have all those memories. My dad always filmed everything since I was born. So just to have all those old pictures and videos is just amazing now just to look back on.
Can I talk to you a little bit about technology again? And a lot of people say, and it's true, that you're the original, or as the young people say, the OG influencer. So you were one before the label was even invented. And that David LaChapelle photograph, so you'd just come out, you were 18, you were in your grandfather's sitting room, and David LaChapelle, who was coincidentally a sort of a protege of Andy Warhol, took that photograph where you were given the finger and you're saying F off to the world. And people can understand that photo now. But that catapulted you into this world, and the internet was just exploding and you were exploding with it. You were riding the crest of a wave, and that's your story. But how do you feel about it now?
I think that photo is so iconic. And I got in so much trouble for it when it came out in Vanity Fair. My mom was horrified and was like, I cannot believe that you did a photo like that.
Yeah.
And I was trying to explain to her, this is David LaChapelle. This is art. This is like iconic. And my mom's like, no, it's not. This is not the image that I want my daughter to be portraying. Now, years later, I think that they can maybe agree with me, but who knows?
an image, the image thing, now that you have Phoenix and you're older, wiser, more mature, how do you look on, because you say a number of times, I've read interviews, that I can't imagine being a 13 year old in this world with selfies and, you know, everything that goes with it, constantly on the phone, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, I can't even imagine just being a teenage girl and just all the pressures of social media and people being mean and in the comment section and having these like unrealistic standards of beauty. It must just be really, really difficult on a teenage mind.
And I suppose people could accuse you of, you know, stoking that up over the years.
Yeah, but back when I was a teenager and just starting out in the scene, there wasn't really a name for it like there is now. And I think there's the good and the bad that comes with it. I think it's amazing that somebody with an iPhone and Wi-Fi and a talent could really parlay that into a huge business and brand. Mm. But then there's also the dark sides of it, where it's really bad for some people's mental health and it could really take over someone's life if they don't think about it in the correct way.
Mm. You say you DJ, and there's lovely stuff in the documentary of you playing at Tomorrowland. And you say it suits you because you're an extroverted introvert.
Yes.
so that means you're at the parties, but you're in control. Is that the attraction of DJing?
I just love it. Yeah, I love being, I feel safe up there.
Yeah.
Like I'm up there conducting the party and just feeling the energy and the love from everybody, and just playing at Tomorrowland and these festivals with hundreds of thousands of people. There's just, the feeling is indescribable. It's just magic being up there and making so many people so happy.
There's nothing like it.
Nothing like it.
Yeah. You witnessed over the last 20 years a huge shift in how women are treated in general and in the media in particular and in Hollywood. Do you look back on, you know, say, South Park, all those monologues that were done about you back in the day? And do you feel angry at those people, or how do you feel?
It was really hard just growing up and having people judge me based upon one night with somebody who I trusted. And I was just in a lot of pain all the time because people were so mean and so vicious, and they would target, you know, myself, Lindsay, Brittany. There was just certain girls that they would really target, and they were just so vicious to us. And it was just really difficult because we were just young girls living our life. Mm. And they villainized us for it when we were just doing what any other normal young girl would be doing.
They wouldn't get away with it today.
They would not get away with it today. I'm so grateful that times have changed, because it's just not acceptable.
You refer to your fans as Little Hiltons. which is a lovely. How do you think that, now they would have seen the documentary obviously already, but there's more detail in the book. How do you think they're going to react to the book?
I just had my book signing in New York this week, and so many of my Little Hiltons were coming and just crying to me and saying, thank you for telling your story. We had no idea. And so many people have been through similar situations than I've went through as well. And just saying, thank you for telling your story. I don't feel alone anymore. And it's just really incredible just what an impact it's made. And I love my fans so much. I consider my Little Hiltons like my little brothers and sisters, and we've grown together, and they've just been so supportive of me. And especially growing up and having to travel usually before 250 days out of the year was very lonely, but having them all around the world is something that really got me through.
Listen, congratulations on the book. It's an eye opener, and hopefully it's helped you and will help you and help others as well. Paris, the memoir is in bookshops now. Paris Hilton, thank you very much. Mind yourself.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Conor Pope joins us in studio. Has Paris Hilton gone up in your estimation?
Yeah, it's a very interesting story. Yeah. I knew nothing about her backstory. I mean, I would have had a very kind of superficial understanding of the world.
Me
of Paris
too,
Hilton.
Up until I read the book.
But it seems like a pretty miserable childhood. And you know the way everyone always dreams of the wealth and the riches, and I wish I had all that money. It's like, without being all cliched, it certainly can't buy you happiness. Cause
These places are unimaginable.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. And it doesn't matter if they're free or if you're paying 20. And like, I thought it was interesting that her parents didn't even know. Like, they were duped by the marketing magazines or the marketing bump.
And groomed by the management.
Yeah, it's terrible. And these people are like 14, 15 years old. You know, they're just children. Well, obviously, they're children, but like, it's terrible.
Imagine putting a trace on your phone to make sure that if your daughter or son escaped from one of these places, they could be recaptured.
Yeah, well, it's like prison. Like, it's like one of those security bracelets that you put around somebody's leg.
Speaking of phones, see what I did there?
Oh, yeah, nice segue, Ray.
So you've been working away undercover, so to speak, or did it all fall on your lap?
I wonder what I should say. No, a lot of it fell on my lap. What happened is, a couple of weeks back, I got a call from a telephone number from the Netherlands, and some guy, I answered the phone as I always do, because like I know nobody in the Netherlands, but I thought it might be one of those scams whereby I get to listen to somebody and I have to call black, blah, blah, blah. So I answered the call anyway, and this guy explained to me that I had some Bitcoin on deposit somewhere and it had been frozen. And I was kind of driving at the time when the call came, and I was kind of really annoyed because I'd like to have recorded the conversation, because I knew that this guy was a total scam artist and a con artist. So I tried to string him along until I could safely park and get my laptop open and start recording him. But like, he clearly smelled a rat. And then about a week or 10 days later, another call from a very similar looking number from the Netherlands came, and I was perfectly positioned because I was sitting at my desk. I had my laptop on one beside me. I had my phone on the other side of me. So I just put my phone on speaker and I recorded this entire conversation as it unfolded. And it's rare that you get to hear a criminal in full flight trying to deceive you and trying to steal your money.
Because we must establish you don't have any Bitcoin.
I have no idea. I'm like the guy on the bus with the tracker mortgage. I don't know what Bitcoin is. Like, I have a vague notion that it's a lot of ones and zeros, and power hungry servers create all this stuff. But I've never invested in cryptocurrencies of any kind. So when somebody comes on the end of the phone and says that my 2.9 Bitcoin have been frozen, and for me to unfreeze the 2.9 Bitcoin, I need to send 1% of my investment to the company, and I need to give them access to my computer. I mean, clearly it was going to be a scam, and it was kind of unfortunate for the person who made contact with me that he called me, because this is literally what I do for a living. Yes. As I said to him at the end of the phone call.
So you asked him, how much is that in real money?
And so he said it was 2.9 Bitcoin. So I said, how much is that in real money? And he said it was 60,000 euros.
Right.
I thought, happy days, 60 grand that I didn't know I had. So he said, to gain access to the 60,000 euros, I would have to unfreeze my cryptocurrency account. And the idea was that because there had been inactivity on my account for a period of time, the account had been frozen. And they couldn't just unfreeze it. They could only unfreeze it if I was to send 1% of the value.
Yeah.
to the account. So then there would be activity on the account. They would be able to unfreeze it, and then they would transfer the money in its entirety back to me. So first off, the scam works in two ways. First, I would have sent 1% of 60,000. So I would have sent 600 quid
right.
via whatever means, credit card, debit card, bank transfer. I would have sent the money to a criminal's bank account. But the more sinister thing happened next, because I said, okay, well, like, you know, what's 1% of 60,000? Thinking he'd, you know, just test his maths. And he was like, oh no, before we get to that, are you familiar with TeamViewer or AnyDesk? Which is, and I actually am familiar with AnyDesk, it's a system whereby it allows somebody else to get remote access to your computer. So I said, oh yeah, I have AnyDesk on my computer. That's already installed. And he said, great. And
he was
delighted with himself.
Punching the air back in
And then he said,
Holland.
Can you give me the six-digit code? Yeah. Now, if I'd given him the six-digit AnyDesk code to my computer, he would have had complete access and control of my laptop. And he would have been able to do anything. So he would have been able to put apps in place that would have been able to record all my keystrokes. So he would in very quick time been able to get access to my financial details, my Apple Pay, all of that stuff. And he would have been able to completely drain my bank accounts. Now, luckily, you know, so it's that simple a thing. And in a way, it was kind of unconvincing because I obviously have never invested in Bitcoin and I am familiar with this particular scam. So I strung him along for a few minutes and then I challenged him, and he didn't really take kindly to being challenged because, you know, I was like, you know, this, you're a criminal, Adam. His name was Adam. Like he gave a full name, but like there was no way, like his name isn't Adam,
yes,
and nor is his name the full name that he gave either. But we just called him Adam in the Irish Times, and we have the full, or we have a 4 or 5 minute edited recording of it on our website. So I just confronted him and I said, well, Adam, why are you stealing money from people? And he was like, I'm not stealing money. I just want to help people. I want to be their guide. I'm like, Adam, you're stealing money. Please. Are you happy with the life choices that have led you to this place? And we had this.
Is there
over
any
back.
Possibility that he didn't know what he was doing?
Absolutely none. None whatsoever.
He was completely aware.
Now, and don't get me wrong, like he wasn't the criminal mastermind behind this. So he was obviously
a low level pawn
in an operation. And the call was actually, he said he was calling from Luxembourg, but the call was coming from the Netherlands. So he was just a pawn in this apparatus. Mm. Mm. But the reality...
What are the laws around recording somebody when
we had it all legally checked. I mean, technically, I would have had to ask his permission to broadcast the call.
Yeah.
But we figured, well, okay, he's a criminal. And
he's not going to come after you.
Well, it's not even that he's not going to come after us. He's breaking the law. And I think it's really important that we do a service to people sometimes without being too high and mighty about it. But the reality is that there are criminals out there who are trying every single day to steal money from people. And some of these criminals are extremely successful because all that would have taken would have been for Adam to get on the phone to somebody who was maybe vulnerable, maybe needed the cash, maybe thought, oh, this is my chance to get out of a financial hole that I'm in. And if they hadn't been so familiar with how these scam artists operate, they might have given them
their details. Yes, he sounded very convincing.
Well, you know, this is their job.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think we have a moral responsibility, whether or not we are technically breaking GDPR rules by not saying, by the way, Adam, we're going to record the call. And I did tell him I was recording the phone call.
You did tell him in the middle of it, yes. Yeah. No, I listened to it. Yeah.
But, so we did check that out with our own solicitors.
It's compelling listening.
Well, I encourage all your listeners to go onto it. And more importantly, because if people are listening to the conversation now that we're having, they're probably not going to get duped by a scam artist because they'll have heard this conversation. But there are people who won't hear this conversation who might be more vulnerable. So I think it would be really instructive for people who might have a vulnerable person in their life who say, this is how they operate.
Yes.
This is how these criminals operate. Because it's very rare that you catch them in real time.
Mm. And is that a scoop? That's a scoop.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's a bit of a scoop. Like
it's a mini scoop.
It's a sprinkle.
Well done. Okay. Now, this is a case of shrinkflation.
Yep.
Isn't it? Yes. This came into pricewatch.rte. Dear Connor, I love an open fire and buy a box of 10 fire logs for €10. When I went to get them the other day, the box had shrunk to 6 logs for €8.50. If you didn't look carefully, you'd think you were buying the same box. What's going on?
Indeed. Well, give the maths. 10 logs for €10.
€1
a log.
right.
Six logs for 8.50 is €1.40.
€1.41
a log. So it's not just shrinkflation. It's a massive, massive price increase. And that's what's going on. I didn't get the name. Actually, the name of the company is largely irrelevant because I think it's indicative of a story that's happening repeatedly all of the time now. And it's one of the ways that companies, retailers, producers have of managing the cost of living crisis on their side. But ultimately, it's the consumer who pays the price. Because
They're not doing anything wrong. They're not being dishonest.
I don't know if they're definitely not doing anything wrong. Okay, because you know, and you could say, okay, well, they're being upfront because they're not claiming that there's 10 logs in the box. They're saying there's actually 6 logs in the box as opposed to 10. But the box size is the same, and the price looks less. So if you're a really hard-pressed consumer and you're doing your big shop on a Friday or Saturday and you've got kids hanging off you and you're really stressed and you're trying to make your money stretch a little bit, I don't know if you're going to be paying as much attention as this particular listener was. And it's not just this product. I mean, we had a story in the Irish Times last week or 10 days ago about McVitie's had shrunk the size of their packet of digestive biscuits from 400 grams to 360 grams.
Same price.
Well, you see, the McVitie's will say, well, we don't know if it's the same price, because we have no role in setting the prices. The retailers who set the prices.
Yes.
So there is, it's not like the good old days when Mr. Tato had a little 4p or 5p on the bag and that's the price that shops charged. So, but it certainly in past experience would suggest that the price isn't going to fall. And according to the Office of National Statistics in the UK, and a lot of the products that are for sale in the UK would be also on sale here. In a 5-year period between 2012 and 2017, 2,500 products got smaller, yet the prices stayed the same.
Yeah.
And it's got worse as the cost of living crisis that we're all living through now has got deeper, because retailers and producers know that they can't, there's price ceilings above which people just simply can't afford to pay for a product. So rather than increasing the prices, they're diminishing the size of the product. And that, the net effect of that is exactly the same. So when you go through it, you look at a product like an Innocent smoothie that was 1 litre is now 900 millilitres. Or when you look at like a particular, so the packaging looks the same.
Yeah.
So you'd need to look at the number to know that. Or then like at the worst ones are like, you know, the toilet paper. You know, they take out like 50 sheets.
Yeah.
But nobody is going to spot
that. But 1,050,000 sheets saves them
saves the company's money. And what has ended up happening is consumers are going to their supermarkets to do their shop. They're trying to make their money stretch further and they come home. And yet they get home, they have less stuff.
Yes, okay. So what's the advice then?
Well, the advice is that and this is maybe a shout out to your listeners. I think we need to be highlighting these stories more frequently, because I think we need to be able to say, almost create a definitive list, because people aren't going to be, the only times it comes to people's attention was a couple of years back, John Prescott, the former Labour Party deputy leader, posted a picture of Toblerones with the little triangles much wider under the caption of Brexit just got real or something like that.
Yes.
And then suddenly there was a huge controversy about the Toblerone, and everyone then was aware that, okay, well, the Toblerone is using less chocolate. Or there was this story we had in the Irish Times about the McVitie's biscuits, and now people know that the McVitie's biscuit has gone.
And then there used to be three fingers in a pack, and then there was only two fingers.
And the penguins used to, a multi-pack of penguins used to have 8, and now they've got 7. As I say, like there used to be 3 fingers, and now there's 2 fingers, or whatever it might be. And I think it's important that we kind of keep a rolling list of this stuff.
Okay.
So if your listeners, and this is kind of a call to action, if you want, if your listeners come across products that they think have got smaller, yet the prices have stayed the same.
Get
in touch, because we can then do a service and say to people, okay, well, this product's got smaller, that product's got smaller. And actually, it's not that the producers are doing anything terrible, because they're facing the same cost of living.
There's a little bit of sleight of hand going on.
Well, you know, I don't know. It's more transparent to increase the price.
Yes.
And if you have to do that, well, then increase the price. And then I'm making an informed decision based on the fact that, well, I used to have €100 to do my big shop.
And I used to buy that particular product.
That product is now
€2
more expensive. So I'm going to buy the product that's the same price as the one that I used to buy.
Yes.
But when it's got smaller and the price stays the same, it becomes much trickier for us to make those decisions.
Okay. there, Connor has asked you to go out there and look for shrinkflation. Report back to us, radio.rte.ie, and we'll name and shame, I suppose. Yeah, it's an interesting one because they're not doing anything wrong. It's, you know, it's
and again, they're facing the same pressures.
I wonder who came up with the idea, though.
Well, actually, I can tell you who came up with the idea. It was vending machines in the United States around 100, 120 years ago.
Oh, did they?
Because they might have been charging 5 cents for a bar of chocolate, yes. Say. And then the price of the bar of chocolate went up to 6 cents.
Yeah.
But the vending machines could only take five cents. So what the vending machine operator said was, well, we just make the bar smaller.
Yeah.
And that's where it started.
Great. Pricewatch at rte.ie or ray at rte.ie for anything that you want Connor to deal with. Connor, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next Monday. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good Marion, thank you very much. Ray got a scam text on Friday from allegedly eFlow regarding paying an unpaid toll, or I would receive nearly €100 fine. I suspected it was a scam, and they confirmed it was a scam, as you'll only ever receive an unpaid fine in the post. Yeah, I've got a number of eFlow ones. They're doing the rounds at the moment, so be careful of those. I get an average of 2 or 3 of these calls a day, and they're from Irish mobile numbers, says that person. And just to say, I had a call this morning from a guy who said something was wrong with my tax returns. I am an 80-year-old with no tax, just an old age pension, just to warn people on that one. And then on shrinkflation, cheese slices, a third of the packet has no cheese in it, but masked by the label on the front. The rage when you open it, says Claire in Dublin. And then back to scammers. My account got scammed out of 20,000. Wow. Before Christmas, a very well-spoken girl called me re-strange activity on my account, and I got totally sucked in by how helpful she was. Thankfully, I got my money back. Just call your bank if you're unsure at all. And that's good advice. And on Paris, Ray, Paris lived a privileged life. Even if she had her own difficulties, she can afford the kind of accommodations that can make a life with ADHD, diagnosed or undiagnosed, not just manageable, but wonderful. Things like cleaners, chefs, or even people, I should say, people like cleaners, chefs, chauffeurs and assistants help with executive functioning issues and give her an advantage most ADHDers will never have access to. There is discomfort for many in the ADHD community with the term superpower. The reality for many is simple things like laundry, remembering family birthdays or important work-related information, and many, many other key things we all do each day are close to impossible for us to manage. For most, ADHD is incredibly debilitating and is definitely not a superpower. Many folks cannot hold down jobs. Years of lobbying and information campaigns have contributed to a gradual improvement in understanding of the neurodevelopmental condition classed as a disability in the UK and US. But the kind of minimisation we all too often see in the media around it is troubling. I hope that down the line you will have someone on who can share an informed opinion from a psychoeducational perspective. I like Paris, but her view is skewed by privilege. We've had a number of adults on with ADHD over time. And we only had 15, 16 minutes with Paris, so we couldn't get into too much detail. And I do appreciate what you're saying there. And I was thinking that as she was saying the superpower thing, that it wasn't going to sit well with some people. Now, we have two quizzers standing by to play our Who Done It quiz. And there's a prize. And this week, it's a two-night stay for two people in Fitzpatrick's Castle Hotel in Killiney. Breakfast on each morning and dinner on one evening as part of their midweek Escape to the Sea package. It's an 18th century four-star luxury castle hotel located near the historic village of Dalkey in Dublin, only minutes from Killiney Beach in Dublin, with panoramic views over Dublin Bay and beyond. It's family owned, now in their third generation. It offers guests tranquility, breathtaking scenery and old world elegance. FitzpatrickCastle.com. FitzpatrickCastle.com. And hello, Sharon Brannigan in Nace.
Hi Ray.
How are you?
Fabulous, how are you?
Good, I'm good, yeah. It'd be Monday and me having been to the dentist, but apart from all of that, it's fine. How are you with the dentist yourself?
I actually don't mind the dentist.
Yeah.
I have a great dentist. Hello to Gary and Kilcullen.
Right.
And I don't mind the dentist.
I don't know if your dentist has this, but my dentist has a TV on the ceiling. Right.
Oh, no.
So when you're getting your work done, there's lovely, serene images of fish, tropical fish, swimming in a coral reef. somewhere off Australia or someplace like that.
Nice, yeah, nice. Sounds, yes. My dentist likes to talk and he asks me questions, which is very difficult with your mouth open.
Why do dentists do that? Why, have they not heard all the comedians take the mickey out of them for doing that? Yeah. So did you see the final of Dancing with the Stars last night?
Sparky arse.
Sparkly, who's sparkly arse?
Who's sparkly arse? Good old Carl Mullins, Ciarán and Donica have christened them Sparkly Arse.
Oh, do have they? You see, I I'll be listening to Morning Ireland. You see, just to be in touch with the world.
I listen to them going to school in the morning.
He's in prison. Sparkly Arse won. Was that good in your house?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we're big Sparkly Arse fans.
right. What a great name. And who's at home with you?
We have Philip, who's 15, and Anna, who's 12.
Right. So you watched that yesterday. Did you watch the rugby on Saturday?
The rugby was on in our house on Saturday, but I was looking after my niece and nephew, who are 4 and 2. So, as I said, it was on, but it's very hard to pay attention to a match when you've got a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old running around.
Were there other people watching? So you were hearing the, yes, no!
Yeah, absolutely. The others were watching it, I kind of had a fair idea what was going on, depending on the sounds coming out.
Yeah, so the second half didn't go according to plan, and then eventually we got into a rhythm. That's the way it went, exactly, I think, and we won, which is the important thing.
That's all that matters.
Yeah, what did Scalacci say? Not Scalacci, who was it? Trapattoni. He said, it's not about the show, it's about the result.
Yeah. And after that, it doesn't matter.
That doesn't matter, It'd be long forgotten. Anne Travers is in County Meath. Hello, Anne.
Oh, hello, Ray. How are you?
Good. You're up against Sharon there. Say hello to Sharon.
Hi, Anne.
Hello, Sharon. How are you? Best of luck.
Great, thanks. Yeah. Thank you. You too.
You're just back from golf?
Just back from golf, yes. Retired. I was a tenant of your research earlier on. Well, a few years now, actually, retired teacher and that. So, yes, right. It's a constant learning process,
And have you watched that Full Swing thing on Netflix? No,
Not yet. I've heard about it all right. Yeah, well, I haven't got around to it now yet.
It's supposed to be very good.
I believe so.
How was the weather today for your golfing?
Lovely now for a change. We had a waterlogged course all last week, so we couldn't get out now at all. And, we missed it, really. And so we're glad now just to get out today and avoid the rain.
How often would you get out?
Every Thursday anyway, and usually on a Monday.
Nice.
I'm a 5-day member in the club, so I don't do the weekends. So it's like weekdays, it's confined to weekdays at the moment.
Yeah. Were you primary or secondary school teacher?
Secondary school, French, German, Irish.
Right, all the languages.
Yes. I'm learning Spanish now at the moment.
Are you? How many languages do you need to have before you're called a polyglot?
That's a good question.
Yeah, there you go. You're fast approaching a polyglot anyway.
I must have an interest in them anyway.
And you must have been delighted when Norma Foley announced that they're going to introduce a modern European language at primary school level.
It should be a huge help now for students, because we used to do exchanges with Germany and so on, and the students were so much far ahead of us with their standard of English. Yeah. So their standard of German, so it's good.
Because they do stuff. English in primary school over there, yes. Yeah.
They do, in primary school, yes. And, I think it's really good.
It's a good idea. They've been talking about it for a long time. Okay, now, the rules, 3 questions each. I'll give you the category. You tell me if you want a clue or not. If you go for a clue, it's easier, so you get a point. But if you go without a clue, you get 2 points for a correct answer. Whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. If it's drawn points, we go to a tie-break question. Good luck to you both. Here we go. Now, Sharon, the first category is music. What do you want to do?
We'll take a clue, please, Ray.
Oh, you'll take a clue, okay.
Yeah.
This 60s band were fronted by brothers Ray and Dave Davies. Who are they for 1 point?
And I love to live so pleasantly. Live this life of luxury. Blazing on a sunny afternoon. In the summertime.
Well,
oh, I No. I know the song.
Just say any no, 60s band. No. The Kinks. The Kinks, Sunny Afternoon.
No.
Okay. Right.
Wouldn't have got it.
You wouldn't have got it. Okay. Over to you, Anne. It's music.
Yeah, I'll take a clue as well.
You take a clue, okay. These 60s primates also had a TV show. Who are they for 1 point?
Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love. I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried.
Well, Anne.
Oh, God, you have me there, hey, now, sorry.
No.
Oh, Anne, no idea, sorry.
60s primates, that was the clue, the monkeys. The monkeys.
The monkeys, sorry.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, okay. No problem. I'm a believer. Great stereo on that. Okay, even start, no points on the board. We're on to question two for you, Sharon. The category, film characters.
Go on, I'll take a clue again.
You take a clue again, okay.
Yeah.
Listen carefully. She's the know-it-all in Harry Potter, played by Emma Watson. Can you name the character for 1 point?
Stop. You're going to take someone's eye out. Besides, you're saying it wrong. It's Leviosa, not Leviosa. Wingardium Leviosa.
Well,
that's Hermione Granger.
It is Hermione Granger. Hey, you're on the scoreboard. A point. Well done. Do you think you would have got it without the clue?
Yes, I probably would have got
it. There you go, that's the way it goes. Okay, to you, Anne, then. Film characters, do you want a clue or not?
Take a clue, please.
Right. You take a clue, okay.
Yeah.
Listen carefully. Her first name is something nasty you might find on your foot. Which film character is this for 1 point?
Hey, Daddy, I want a golden goose.
No, I want one of those.
Who says I can't? I want one. I want a golden goose.
Gooses. Geeses. I want my geese to lay gold eggs for Easter. 100 a day.
Well.
Sorry, no, you haven't there. Really sorry about that.
No.
I haven't.
That's Veruca Salt from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Okay, it's not over. It's not over for yet. It's not over for yet, Anne, because let's see the way it goes. Sharon, if you go for no clue and get it right, then Anne can't catch it. However, if you take a clue, as you have been doing for the rest of the quiz, and get it right, and then Anne goes without a clue and gets it right, we're into a tie-break situation.
Okay.
What do you want to do, Sharon?
What? Can you tell me what the category is?
Oh, sorry. Yes, I should have done that. Yes. Yes, you know the rules better than I do. Irish TV personalities. Irish TV personalities. So do you want a clue or not? As I say, if you go without a clue and get it right, that's it. Anne can't catch you. Hello, Sharon? Oh, she dropped off the line. I thought she was taking that. we're getting Sharon back up there. Are you still there, Anne? You are?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought she was taking her time to make up her mind, but we're going to get her back up there. Hello, Sharon? No, will we go to a commercial? We have her. Hello, Sharon.
Sorry, right. Hi.
Yes. So, Irish TV personalities, do you want a clue or not?
I'll go without a clue.
Okay. For 2 points and the win today, who is this TV personality, Irish TV personality?
Filthy windows, yeah. Just to say, outside window is always much more dirty than the inside window, okay? And the inside window dirt is different than the outside. This is street dirt and all
of
that.
Yeah, Mankey.
Okay, Mankey, yeah. So on the outside, I usually use, a bucket with a little fairy liquid.
Yeah,
can I tell you, I did clean my windows recently. Yeah, I did. That's true. Not in the hotel, at the house.
Who's that?
That's Frances Brennan.
It is, okay, it is. Yes, you get 2 points for that. And sorry about that, in the words of the late great Larry Gogan, they didn't suit you today.
No problem at all, Ray.
Yes,
thank you very much.
Yeah, we're going to send you out a radar show. Keep cup, you can bring to the golf with you. And lovely talking to you. Mind yourself, Anne.
Thank you, and well done, Sharon, and enjoy.
Thanks very much, and best of luck at the golf, Anne.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Cheers, bye.
Bye. Well done, Sharon. You're off to Fitzpatrick's Castle Hotel. You can go to fitzpatrickcastle.com to see what's in store for you. Great talking to you. Well done. See you now. Bye.
Cheers.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, hard to believe that it's over 12 years since we lost. And when I say we, I mean the world lost Amy Winehouse. She was only 27 at the time. And she showed so much promise. Her album Back to Black was one of those defining pop albums that only comes along once in a generation. Anyway, we get a chance to remember Amy in a new exhibition at the Museum of Style Icons in Newbridge. And joining me now to talk about it is her stylist and friend Naomi Parry. How are you doing, Naomi?
Hello. Yes, I'm good, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. You brought a dress.
I bought two dresses,
Two dresses, right.
Yeah. So these are going to be on display. I should have gloves on, actually. But so I've got they're two dresses from the tour wardrobe that I designed and created for her for the 2011 tour, which actually sadly wasn't to be.
Yeah. So we'll get back to the dresses.
Sure.
Let's start. You met Amy in a pub.
I did. I met her in a bar in Soho. In 2005.
Right.
Yeah.
So had Frank been released?
Yes, Frank it had. So I think it had maybe just been released, or maybe she'd just gone through the first round of promo for it. So, but
what age was she?
I was 18, so she was 21.
Okay.
Yeah, so we were young.
I know, it was just strangers. You were strangers in a bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so we both were with friends and my friend was attracted to her friend, so sent over some drinks in an attempt to spark a conversation, which worked. They came over and we ended up spending the rest of the evening gallivanting around Soho. So, yeah, and then we just kind of kept in touch after that.
Yeah.
Well, kept in touch. We became really close friends. It's like a bit of an understatement.
And you became her stylist.
Yeah, exactly. Became a stylist, lived with her for a bit, you know.
Yeah. So I feel a little bit odd, you know, being in the company of somebody who was that close to Amy Winehouse, because she was just this very special person, wasn't she, in so many ways?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you spot that from the get-go?
She definitely had something about her, like real aura, real kind of presence, even though she was tiny. She really stood out to me, of course. But it is, I think, because she was such a good friend and she, you know, she was just like little Amy to me. It's strange thinking that, like how much of an impact that she's had and how many people are so, you know, excited by her, really.
Yeah.
It's strange to think.
And so unfortunate as well, like I'm thinking about Kurt Cobain as well, that death brings an added appeal, oddly, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because we think of what could have been.
Yeah, of course. It sort of, you know, immortalizes them as iconic, I guess. I think
at a moment in time, you know.
And she, because she left and at the sort of height of her career as well, you know, when everybody was wondering whether she was going to release another album or what was going to happen next, and I think everybody was rooting for her as well. Like everyone wanted her to get better. So, yeah.
And you and her friends, and she'd many friends, but you obviously were at close hand seeing her go downhill.
Yeah. Yeah. I was. So I was actually living with her in 2011. Between January and May, I moved out because it was a lot to deal with, as you can imagine. And I just felt if I was living there and I wasn't helping her, then I was enabling her, actually. Mm. So I actually moved out and I moved around the corner.
And was there any talking to her?
I wrote her a letter once and she... it responded quite well to that, but it was short-lived. I think, you know, with alcoholism, it's the journey to recovery isn't linear. So she was very up and down. And, you know, every time she got sober, we were really hoping that that would be the last time. And you know, I think everybody really thought she'd pull through. Sadly not.
And you had put together a wardrobe for this tour.
Yes.
And where did Belgrade come into that tour? Was that the beginning?
That was the first show. Yeah,
right.
It was the first show. And it was, I mean, you know, as you saw, it was pretty catastrophic.
Yes.
And
so just tell people about your experience of that gig.
It was probably one of the worst experiences of my life, if I'm being honest. I was in a hotel room with her And she, it was just me there, and I was, they wanted me to get her ready. She was, you know, out of her mind. Couldn't even hold her head up. I was begging them to, you know, she couldn't go on stage. She couldn't even stand up. And she was running, I don't know, half an hour late or something. And she just suddenly, out of nowhere, just kind of snapped out of it, but only so much, and just sort of waltzed out of the room. And we went to the show, and she shoved on her dress, and then she walked on stage. But obviously in the time between the hotel and going on stage, she'd had access to more alcohol. And so it just topped her up. And it was just, it was awful. She was on the stage too long as well. Her band were just broken by that point, because I think they were under the illusion that she was actually doing a lot better. And that she was, you know, she was going to be okay. And she, it just wasn't the case at all. So it was a really difficult show. And I think, you know, when she came off stage, she got in a car with me and she was like, it wasn't that bad, was it? And I was like, oh, it really wasn't good.
Because she was missing her cues and she was falling all over the place, because they showed footage of that in the documentary.
Yeah. She just was so unwell. She just was so, so unwell. That should never have happened.
No, it's very it's very sad, isn't it?
Mm.
And that was the tour cancelled then?
Yeah, so that was the last time I ever worked with her.
Right.
And I kind of knew at that point. I remember getting a plane home with the band and I was just hysterical. Just like, this is it, guys. She needs the longest break. She needs to recover. Like, this is it. It's over. Mm. But I was obviously incredibly worried about her at that time.
But you didn't work for her, but you were helping her out. A number of days before she died, you left her dresses.
Yeah, so she was supposed to go to a wedding. So on the Friday, I went to a festival, but on the Friday, I actually laid, these are two of the dresses that I laid out for her. I went upstairs and she was asleep and I was like, I'm going to leave her because she probably needs it. And I came back down and I laid out five outfits, some of which were Dolce & Gabbana, and then the others were these dresses. And I put shoes. I basically made like little people on the sofa.
Yeah.
And then wrote her a note and just said, you know, you can rearrange these however you want. Choose whatever you like. I just thought that these would work really well. I hope you have a wonderful time. I love you, you know. And then when we got to go back into the house after she'd gone, they were all still laid out exactly as
I'd left
them.
How many days after did she die?
That was the... She died the next day. Oh, right. Oh, no. Yeah, she died the next day. She died the next day. Because I found out on the Saturday, yeah.
Yeah. She, like, as well as being such an amazing talent from such a young age, she had a look.
Yes. She did have a look.
Didn't she?
Yeah.
And even, I would imagine, you designed dresses for her. And some, everyone can see them at the Museum of Style Icons in Newbridge. The exhibition runs till May. But she was able to put her stamp on. How did she do that? Well, you know, she'd rip something or cut something off.
Oh, yeah. Like, it didn't matter how much you tried to perfect her. She'd always alter something she had like a, you know, little punk in her. So just if she wanted something shorter, she'd just suddenly decide last, because everything was quite last minute with her. It was always, you know, quite stressful. So, you know, hack the bottom off something, or you'd have to loosely pin something in, or she'd attach something to it, you know, whether it was a headscarf or something like that. If her eye makeup was too perfect, she'd elongate it.
It's interesting, because I was going to say that next. It always looked as if it was last. It always looked as if it was just, you know, it wasn't styled.
Thrown together.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I don't think people knew she had a stylist for a long time, and they probably thought it was the worst stylist ever. Because it was very important to her that it felt authentic, and it was her. And I mean, it really was. All of it came from her. She created her beehive. She created her makeup look. You know, she knew exactly what she wanted to wear. And I just think it was important to her that she didn't look too polished.
Yeah. You often think about her, obviously. You did the book in 2021, which is an amazing book.
Thank you.
Amy Winehouse, Beyond Black, great photographs and great copy as well from people who knew her. And so many people, so many famous people. I didn't know she was friendly with Bryan Adams, for example.
Oh, yeah. They were really good friends, yeah. she went and stayed with him for a while.
And he photographed her.
Yeah, photographed her. And he tried to teach her to drive. He told me this amazing story of trying to teach her to drive, but she put her foot down on the accelerator and they almost crashed into something. So he was like, right, okay, I'm not going to teach you to drive anymore.
But what I was going to say, in thinking about her, and I was just saying at the beginning of the show that she would have been 40 this year.
Yeah.
That's, which is still very young.
Yeah. But still, to me, that's crazy. It's crazy to think that I am the age I am. But yeah, it is. It's weird to think.
Do you imagine what she could have achieved?
I honestly think she would have had a massive break. I think she would have done a Lauryn Hill and disappeared for a while. Right. And then she would have come back and done a tour and everyone would have been super excited about it. But I think she would have had a long time off.
Lovely talking to you. It's sad remembering the great Amy Winehouse. Naomi Perry, thanks so much. We'll play out on a bit of what do you, Tears Dry on Their Own? Is that okay?
Yeah. He walks away, the sun goes down, he takes the day, but I'm grown, and in your way, in this blue shade, my tears dry on their own.
Yeah, so the exhibition is in the Museum of Style Icons in Newbridge. It's free. And it's there until May again. Naomi Parry, thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Sarah and Cormac on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.